So good evening, everyone. Welcome to tonight's event, which will relate to nationalism in Thailand. For those of you who do not know me, my name is Jürgen Hake. I'm the director of the Sosbuhok Southeast Asia Center here at LSE. It's my great privilege honor tonight to welcome Associate Professor Dr. Drell Selway from Brigham University in Utah. Drell has been at the center as a visiting appointment for the last two terms, and he's been conducting research on the topic I think he will introduce to us as Red North, Blue North, Yellow North, Who's North? Contesting Thai Nationalism in Shinawat Country. It's the kind of thing that we normally do when we have a visiting appointment. Yeah, they sort of give a paper to the audience. We will conduct it like any public talk that we organize at the center. So that means Drell will be speaking for about 40 to 45 minutes, and then we go straight into the Q&A. Without further ado, it's my great pleasure to invite Drell to give his talk. Welcome.
Thank you. So this is a kind of a special treat for me. Academic conferences usually have way less people, and they have other academics, which means you have to speak in academic speak. So this was actually kind of a real treat for me to speak and practice about how I think my ideas could relate to, let me just say, normal people, but to more to the general public. So it was really really good for me to prepare this talk. The subject of my talk is on nationalism in Thailand, and I'm going to be presenting some results for some work I've been doing there for the past 2 or 3 years, and that I'm writing up here at LSE for a book project, which have to do specifically with how nationalism is functioning in a region of Thailand, the north of Thailand. It also has an ethnonym, so it goes by the Lanna region of Thailand, and I'll talk more about the meaning of those terms later on, and the importance of this region, and especially of how nationalism kind of functions there in the future of the Thai polity. As academics, we normally don't get into the business of prediction per se, but a lot of the things we write obviously have implications for how we think the Thai polity will unfold, and so I'll give some thoughts on that near the end of the talk on how I think those things matter. Anyone who is familiar with Thailand general familiarity with Thailand will kind of have a kind of base, scarce knowledge of Thailand, which looks something along these lines, which I'll describe over the next few slides. And they have to do with the unity of the Thai people, the homogeneity of the Thai people. And I think this photograph here, which is taken around the royal grounds, near the Grand Palace in Bangkok. I mean, this is a beautiful sight. This is, I think, on the king's 80th birthday they were celebrating. And here you have thousands of Thais coming out holding candles in support of the then monarch, King Bhumibol. And it's a beautiful scene. For many Thais, this was a highly emotional time to celebrate the life of the king who had been on the throne for many, many years. And it signified, like I said, just how unified the Thai people were in terms of their nationalism, their identity, and their view of the polity. This view has kind of been emphasized again and again by Thai elites. I'm going to show you some slides now. This is actually from a little movie played in the cinema. If you go to the cinema in Thailand, before you watch any movie, you will watch, I'll call it a short movie, some people might call this a piece of propaganda, which is relating to the monarchy. They may play the Thai national anthem as part of this. In this particular one, they actually played the king's anthem, and they go through certain scenes relating to the king's life and how this relates to Thailand. In this particular version of it, you see the king going to different parts of Thailand and interacting with different peoples in Thailand, right? So you see just regular Thai people, you see people from the northeast, You see ethnic minorities from Thailand. You see Muslims in the south of Thailand. And what did you notice in all of these shots that I showed you? People are happy, right? They're uniformly happy across the entire country. And this is the point of the movie, right? The point is to get you to feel emotional about the role of the king and how he brings happiness to the Thai polity. So again, just reinforcing this idea of a unified, homogenous Thailand. Now, if you go to find out some facts on Thailand, so, for example, the ultimate source of facts, the CIA fact book, I mean, what else can you get better facts? And go and find out some information on Thailand, you'll see that Thailand is, according to the CIA fact book, very homogenous, 95.9% Thai, 2% Burmese, other 1.3%. They don't actually cite their sources for where that comes from, but that's what they give as Thailand, Thailand's ethnic groups. This image of Thailand was, of course, reinforced over the past few years as the passing of their longtime king came along. And you saw similar images as I showed you in the first picture, but this time with Thais donned in black mourning the death of the king. And I have family members who participated in this in Bangkok, and this was a highly emotional time for them. You can see again around the royal grounds, people gathered with pictures of the king commemorating his life. This is a highway in Bangkok. Lots and lots of people. And on Facebook, people would black out their Facebook with this little saying here, which basically translates as, I want to be a servant of this king in every successive life that I live. So reincarnated life, or maybe translated as, I want to be a servant of the king forever. Some people translate it that way. And so, again, you would get the impression that this was a very homogenous and unified people. But as an academic, if you wanted to go and try and gauge that, this would be very difficult. And one of the biggest barriers to that are the strict lese majeste laws. It is against the law to say anything that could be taken as offensive to the monarchy at all, whatsoever. And people have been imprisoned for this. And this has really ramped up over the last few years as the military has taken over control. So as an academic, if you wanted to try and measure the depth of this commitment to the king, or to Thai nationalism in general, this would be very difficult because you couldn't just go there and ask people, right? You could get arrested for talking about the monarchy, especially if you asked the question, do you like the monarch? Or how strongly do you identify as Thai nationalism, since the monarchy is so important to Thai nationalism? Just the discussion of nationalism itself could be deemed as anti-monarchy. So, similar to other kind of autocratic regimes, right, maybe North Korea, how can you tell that this is performance, or how can you tell that this is true piety, right? True reverence for the king, true feelings for the king. It's very difficult to know that. But that's a question that I will be addressing in this talk. Now, just to give kind of a very brief history of Thai nationalism and how it came about, this began to take place during the reign of King Chulalongkorn, so in the roughly the mid-1800s to late-1800s. And Thailand was not unique in terms of its very explicitly on the behalf of the leaders trying to create a national identity. European countries were also scrambling to create national identities during this period of time. So Thailand is not certainly unique, but it was, you know, relative to, for example, to the creation of English nationalism. This is a somewhat later project in terms of the state actually taking this on board and trying to create what we consider today to be Thainess. And this especially takes off under a later king, Vajiravut, and he writes lots and lots of things about Thai nationalism that become quite popular. He's very articulate from those types of things. And so people see these kings and these couple of these reigns is particularly important in creating this idea of Thai nationalism. Thailand actually had a coup of sorts in 1932 where the monarchy was overthrown by a military in partnership with a secular party. During that period of time, the monarchy was kind of in flux, whether kicked out or not. They weren't actually kicked out, they were still in power. But this idea of nationalism began to be contested. A couple of decades later, during the 50s, the military kind of figured out that they actually needed the monarchy for legitimacy. So in many ways, they invited the monarchy back and gave them a much more prominent role in terms of representing the state. And that continued for a few more decades until Thailand experiences this rapid economic growth, goes through enormous changes societally as well as financially, at the end of which is kind of stopped short by this financial crisis in 1997. And in 1997, they write a new constitution. And as part of that constitution, what they really want to do is help kind of engineer political parties. They want a two-party system. They want responsible parties. And so they do that, and they hold the first elections under this new constitution in 2001. And lo and behold, their constitutional engineering came to fruition and created a fairly successful two-party system. And a figure called Thaksin Shinawat comes along, and he creates a party, the Thairak Thai Party, which can be translated as the Thais Love Thais Party. And it was a very unique blend of nationalism, where he had groups, you know, support from rural areas of Thailand in combination with support from the capital, with especially small business owners, but really kind of pushing this idea of Thai nationalism and the fact that, hey, even after this financial crisis, we are a successful country, we can be the leaders in Southeast Asia. And for many people, Thailand was very successful during this period of time. And still united. I'm going to cut a very long story short. Lots of people got upset with Thaksin for numerous reasons. And there was a coup staged against him in 2006. So I went there in 2006 for my dissertation research, and I wanted to study the dynamics of this new democratic electoral system that had been put in place. And they staged a coup 2 months after I got there. So I kind of had to change things around a bit figure some other things out to do. During this period of time, so since the coup, nationalism has kind of featured quite heavily, at least in the minds of the military. And they haven't ever really explicitly come out and said, hey, we have a problem with nationalism in this country, and this is the problem, or that is the problem. Sometimes they've kind of implied that Thaksin was perhaps anti-monarchist, or perhaps there are areas of the country that aren't quite on board with this whole nationalism project. But by and large, it hasn't been an explicit part of this rhetoric, but it's definitely been there, and I'm going to talk a little bit about some of it being there. So first of all, in the most recent constitution that was written, General Pyut seems to be fairly obsessed with this idea of nationalism and that this is one of the problems, the reason why he staged the coup in 2014 and some of the things that need fixing. So I've taken some selections from the constitution. Duties of the Thai people, to section 50, to protect and uphold the nation, religion and king. Nation, religion and king are kind of like the three pillars of Thai nationalism. And they make up the official definition of Thai nationalism. So here they are, duties of the people. In the preamble, this is kind of like explaining why I had to go through and do all of this. This is what it said. Caused by there being persons, I don't know who those persons are, maybe you can guess, ignoring or disobeying governance rules of the country, being corrupt and fraudulent, abusing power, and lacking a sense of responsibility towards the nation. Section 3, goals of institutions for the common good of the nation. Section 39, citizenship. This is just about the revocation of Thai nationality shall not be permitted. So once you're Thai, you're always Thai. Section 54, education. All education should aim to develop learners to be good, disciplined, proud of nation. Right? This is a big emphasis in this most recent constitution. Now, to follow up, especially with point 54, Pyut comes out with a policy that we refer to as his 12 values. He makes a speech on July 11th of 2014 of that year, saying the persisting problems in Thailand that need to be solved urgently require that we first define clear core values of Thai people so we can build a strong nation. As part of this, he then goes out on and outlines these are the 12 values that all Thai people should adhere to and believe in. And he then says that all Thai children in every school around the country now have to recite these 12 values on a daily basis. Okay? So examples of these 12 values include, not surprisingly, love for the nation, religion, and monarchy, preserving Thai customs and traditions, discipline and respect for elders and the rule of law. So I would kind of categorize General Piat's stance, one of the main justifications for why that he gives for taking over in the coup, as kind of getting Thai nationalism back on track. So what is the problem with Thai nationalism? Why is he so worried about this? A couple of pictures here that may perhaps suggest something that he saw or that the military sees that other people haven't seen. Here's a banner here. If anybody can read this, this actually says the country of Lanna. Lanna being the northern region that I'm going to talk about today. And this one over here, which I found in English in the Chiang Rai Times, Thailand's army, this is in March 26th of 2014, so approximately 2 months before Priyut stages the coup. Thailand's army hunts northern Lanna separatists. This article actually goes on to say that these separatists were actually only joking about separatism. It's actually kind of a funny article. And that we shouldn't take them too seriously. But this banner is a little bit more serious, because this banner went up and nobody really knows who put them up, and it went up across several cities across the north, calling for a separate Lanna state. But then these news articles came out and the military said, we don't really have separatists. These people that you saw on the news, they were just kind of joking about it. So this really kind of piqued my interest, and I wanted to know, is this actually really a joke, or is there something to this? Now, it just so happens that the Lanna region is exactly where Thaksin Shinawatra comes from, right? Making the Lanna region a particularly, potentially problematic place in terms of Thai nationalism. And again, this project is really kind of designed to get at this question, to see how deeply held some of these views are, and to see how problematic, if you want to use those words, from the Thai Central States point of view, the Lanna region is. Okay, I showed you some figures earlier on from the CIA fact book. Here are some perhaps more accurate figures from Ethnologue, which is a good source for the size of different language groups in the country. It's one that linguists put together and is taken as a pretty serious source by linguists. So in Thailand, a country of about 68 million people today, but in 2000, when these figures come from, was a little bit closer to the 60 million mark, only about a third of them are first language Central Thai speakers. Central Thai is the standard official language of Thailand, of the central state. It's the language in which all bureaucrats and civil servants conduct their business in. It's the language of the education system. We have lots of L2 learners, these are people who speak it as a second language, because of course everyone's going through this education system, but only a third of them are first language speakers, right? So we could call these ethnically Central Thais. And in fact, in the rest of the Ethnologue, you see down different branches of language branches. So these are not dialects of Thai, although some people have in the past tried to say that they were dialects of Thai. These are given as separate languages by linguists who categorize and define languages. So in the Northeast, we have a language, and given this figure is 1983, so that number is actually closer to 20 million. So speakers of, they're calling it just Northeastern Thai. In Thailand, they would call this Isan Thai, which is much closer to Lao, the Lao dialect of the country next door. From my point of view, I think for all intents and purposes, it is identical. I can't tell any differences except for words that they may have just got from Thai popular culture. And then down a different branch, we have Northern Thai, or Lanna Thai. That's the region that I'm going to be talking about today. Somewhere in the range of about, again, this is a 1983 number, so this number is probably closer to somewhere in the range of 8 to 9 million people in Thailand. So a very large region in Thailand. And then we have Southern Thai as well, which is a little bit closer to Central Thai, but still categorized as a separate language. This is very different than those slides that I showed you to start off this presentation with. So where do we get this idea that Thailand is homogeneous and unified versus this idea that linguists give? And how can we reconcile those two things? Well, nationalism has a lot to do with this, because of course you can be a Northern Thai or a Lanna person and still identify as being Thai, right? In the same way you can be Scottish and identify as being British. Those things are not incompatible. But because of the political situation there and the fact that we cannot ask these questions kind of out in the open, it's been a little bit harder to ascertain and to figure out some of these questions. Okay, a little bit of history on Lanna now, the Lanna region. And I don't know how the colouring of the slides is for you. It's a lot nicer on my Mac than it is actually on this particular PowerPoint. But here is the border of Thailand, in this white one here, the modern day borders. And you can see that this old kingdom of Lanna kind of goes across that border, goes a little bit up into Burma here, a little bit up into southern China. So this is the old kingdom of Lanna. You can see in the northeast as well, we have these large tracts, at least during this period of time, from the Isan region, that are part of these Laotian kingdoms as well. But Lanna itself, these tended to kind of be more the backwaters of the kingdoms that were over there on that side of Mekong. Whereas the Lanna kingdom was centered in present-day Thailand in the city of Chiang Mai, which is where I conducted the survey. Here is the modern-day maps and provinces that roughly correspond to the old Lanna kingdom. And so a second question that I'm going to talk about today are these regional versus national identities, and specifically this Lanna or northern identity versus the Thai national identity. How strong are either of these identities in the north? Okay, looks like I brought up these maps again. Oh, it's because I just wanted you to have them in your mind because I'm going to show you a bunch of maps, okay? So keep up that little... Sometimes we say that Thailand looks like an elephant, right? Because an elephant's so important in Thailand. So here's the trunk, right? Here's a little tusk here. One ear, two ear, right? So it's actually the elephant's right ear that we're talking about as you're looking at the elephant. So keep an eye on that right ear of the elephant. 2001, Thaksin Shinawatra comes along and starts running his Thais Love Thais party. These are the 2001 elections, and you can see he's pretty popular in that Lanna region. This dark colour here are kind of provinces that went for Thaksin and his party. So that roughly corresponds with the Lanna kingdom up there. Gets even better, right? He gets better everywhere for Thaksin in 2005. I mean, he just does really well there. But especially in the Lanna region as well, you can see they're voting heavily for Thaksin and his party. Remember 2006, you get a coup. They hold some elections again in 2007. And again, red is Thaksin's party and does well up in the Lanna region. And then again in 2011, does well in the Lanna region. Forget the one on the right. It's a different electoral system. I've got my favourite map coming up here. This is the most recent referendum on the constitution, and I love whoever put this map together because they made the rest of these army colours, because this was a military government holding a referendum. But where do you see the three strong areas that held out against this referendum and voted no? Well, you see the Lanna region, you see this Isan region that was basically under those old Laotian kingdoms, and down here you see the Malay Islamic regions as well. So, clearly, nationalism, right, is being, at least subtly, acted out in these elections in some way. We don't know exactly how it is, but there's something to these patterns. So I should talk a little bit more about the Chinawat clan. They come from Chiang Mai. If you go down one of the main roads in Chiang Mai, right near opposite a shopping mall, which Thailand has lots of, really nice air-conditioned shopping malls. On the opposite side of the road, you'll see a little silk shop, or a rather large silk shop, that belongs to the Chinawat clan. This is how the clan made their money in the past. On the outskirts of Chiang Mai, you can take a little day trip and go to the Chinawat silk factory, where you get a tour of how they make silk and the history of silk. And it all has to do a lot with their family as well, if you take the tour. Thaksin came up, like I said, in 2001 elections, and he represented kind of this provincial wealth. and that was now competing with these traditional Bangkok elites. So he was ousted in coup in 2006. His sister won the elections in 2011 as the leader of the party. It had to be renamed because the other party got dissolved. But we'll just call it the Shinawat Party for the purposes of this lecture. She was also ousted in a coup in 2014. So these two Shinawat people, representatives, as some people might say, of the northern region, were kicked out in coups. It's not very good for the psyche of democratically elected people. So they got upset about this. And along with other people who voted for Thaksin parties, they took to the streets. This one is in 2010. And in 2010, they basically took over Bangkok. I used to live down on in the financial district near Sa Tawn. Took over the entire financial district. And at one point in time, because the security forces clamped down on them, it looked more like a war zone, right? In fact, the red shirts suffered a number of deaths. Estimates are over 100. Somebody blew up the World Trade building over there. Nobody's fully taken claim for that. The government blames the red shirts for doing that. They may well have done that. But there was a lot of violence on the streets in 2010. Again, you can begin to see maybe why Prayut is getting a little bit worried, especially if these red shirt people primarily are coming from the Lanna region of the north and the Isan region of the northeast, two regions that are linguistically different and two regions that have a different historical track from the rest of the country. So this is the third research question I'm going to talk about today when I talk about my results, which is, so is there a difference then between these red shirts, these people who support Thaksin and his parties, and the yellow shirts, these opposition supporters of the opposition party, the Democrat Party, who generally have billed themselves as being pro-monarchy, although the Reds have never come out and said we're anti-monarchy, but the yellow shirts have said that they're anti-monarchy. So there's a lot of this rhetoric going on. And it's very difficult, right, to figure out what is actually going on. Are the red shirts really pushing for a different type of nation? Are they really pushing against the king? And so, this is just to tell you that when I say yellow shirts, I may interchangeably talk about Democrat Party supporters. You should know they're the same thing. When I talk about red shirts, these are supporters of parties generally loyal to Thaksin Shinawat. The most recent version of that is the Pheu Thai Party, which means four Thais. Right? So you can see the nationalism really coming out in their choice of party labels, replacing the Thais Love Thais Party. I don't think that's coincidental, right, that they're choosing to give it a very nationalistic title to their party. So let me talk about my research now. Because like I said, you go to Thailand, you see these things going on, you talk to different people, people will give you different versions of events that they think are the truth. But I really wanted to try and kind of nail down and find out what was going on. So how do you do that? How do you gauge public opinion in sensitive environments? This is actually a methodological challenge for political scientists. If we really want to figure out the truth, how can we do that in a country where there are strict lèse majesté laws, right, that will put you in prison for talking about certain subjects? How do you do that under a military junta who is imprisoning opposition people? You may ask people, they may give you some answers, but how do you know their answers are truthful, right? And also, it's pretty important to protect your subjects as a researcher, right? So both of those are pretty important. Now, I'm going to use a friend of mine. I actually don't know this person. So I wrote a Washington Post monkey cage blog on some of my research, and this person went and gave me some comments at the bottom. About how dissatisfied, how much he disagreed, or she disagreed, with what I was writing. I'm going to use some of this person's quotes, because I actually thought I had addressed many of these things in my post as to why I was doing research the way I was, and they went and criticized everything. Some of these are quite funny. But this is what Padova 44 says. The constant catch-22 of reporting in Thailand is that you can't report the truth from within the country unless you wish jail time. This is true. He pressured to be, I don't know what that means, he pressured to be seen sad. But that's probably the. I forgot to copy over the H, the T, sorry. The pressure to be seen sad, this is after the death of the king, is intense under a fascist dictator. Be considered insufficiently sorrow and you can be charged with less majesty. I think that pretty much sums up a good description of the environment. So how do you get truthful answers from that environment and protect your subjects? Second thing is about desirability bias. So let's just say that these less majesty laws were not in existence. We get rid of them today. There is still a very strong cultural norm in Thailand to say that you support the monarchy, right? It's not like here in England. Here in England, you can say you hate the royal family, right? And some people may be disgusted at your use of language, right? But generally, you're allowed to say that and mock them and make sitcoms, you know, cartoons about them, all sorts of different things. Can't do that. And so even if you get rid of these laws, there's a strong social bias, a desirability bias to make sure that you do this. And so Padova 44 writes about this. There are never-ending newsreel loops 24/7, day after day on Thai TV, showing the king amongst his people, blah, blah, blah. And I showed you some of those things in the Thai cinema, a little bit of the propaganda. But there are literally billboards, gigantic posters strung over buildings. You cannot escape propaganda, and I won't use that with any value-laden terms, but propaganda on the monarchy when you go to Thailand. So even if you got rid of the laws, there would be strong bias towards you at least wanting to appear like you like the monarchy and you like Thai nationalism and you think everything's okay, right? A last thing that Padova 44 demonstrates through his comments rather than talks about is researcher bias. And this is how Padova 44 reacted to the fact that I had 2,000 people sampled from Chiang Mai. This person says, nobody in the two places I live in up north has shown the least interest in the king's death. Nobody wears black, etc. I asked Thais when the king was last up here, and not one has any idea. He didn't exist when he was technically alive. Why should he when he's dead? So Padova 44 is saying, the few people that I happen to have randomly bumped into in Thailand know more about this than your sample of 2,000 people, right? This is what I call researcher bias. Because I may have had some pre-existing thoughts about what I thought was going on in Thailand. The whole reason why I took such a large sample was to try and overcome that bias, right? So these are the three things that we have to try and get over. So to try and get rid of researcher bias, rather than relying on the few people that I know, family members, who actually happen to be more yellow shirters, right, from Bangkok, and people that I've run into, like taxi drivers. I talk to a lot of taxi drivers, but I could hardly base research on family and taxi drivers, right? I decided to take a sample of approximately 2,000 people from Chiang Mai. And as part of this survey, because you still have a problem when you write surveys, right, about people wanting to answer the questions in a certain way, I built into this project certain ways to specifically get at this desirability bias and the sensitive nature of the environment in Thailand. So rather than just straight up ask people, how strongly do you feel Thai, right? Because I actually asked that question. That question has actually been asked on every World Value Survey questionnaire for the past few years. And like 99% of Thai people say, I'm as strongly Thai as you could possibly be in the whole entire world, right? There's no variation on that question whatsoever. So I've taken a behavioral measure of strength of identity that I talk about. Another thing is that I use some experimental techniques that I built into the questionnaire. And I did this for two reasons. The first one was to protect individuals, right? So what if I ask individuals, how strong is your nationalism? And they say zero on a scale of 0 to 10. And somehow that gets out, right? That individual could get in trouble for that. So doing this means that I have to rely on group averages, which we'll talk about later, but it means that I can de-link it from an individual and they can't get in trouble. Another thing that also helps overcome kind of this desirability bias is that by using experimental techniques, I can randomly give certain questions to different groups of people, treatment and control groups, and they won't know the full context of the research question. They just see the little bit that I show them, and then I compare that to a different type of question that I show somebody else. These are standard techniques in survey research to get at sensitive questions in these types of environments. Okay, so this was done in Chiang Mai, the former capital of the Lama Kingdom, over the summers of 2015 and 16, notably before the king passed away. And used a quota sample based on age, income, and gender to get my sample of about 2,000. And I oversampled on some populations that I really wanted to know about, although I'm not going to talk about those in the talk today. Okay, now I have a bunch of different questions here. And hopefully that makes sense as we go along. But by the end, I hope to tie these together and show you how these questions and the answer to these questions teach us something that we didn't know before about this. So first of all, I asked in an open-ended question, which I regretted as soon as I got back and had to get these things translated and coded, what Tainus meant to them, okay? What does Tainus mean to you? So Quam Ben Tai. In Thai. What does it mean to you? And I let people just say whatever they wanted to say. Okay? And then, of course, I had to translate this, and then I had to make sense of it, so then I coded it. And these were the general coding categories that people came up with. There is obviously the trifecta, the three pillars of Thai nationalism, nation, religion, and monarchy. People would talk about that. Traditions and customs, values and behavior. Lots of people talked about unity and peace. Some people talked about politics, by which they meant democracy and freedom mostly. Some people just talk about the land, and there were other responses like Thai food was a quite popular one, and Thai food is really quite good. So, okay. So here's just looking at the whole sample of the over 2,000 people. And up here in the yellow, because yellow is the color of the king, or at least the last king, we have the three pillars of Thai nationalism, at least the official ones. King, religion, and nation, which here mostly people are talking about ethnicity and language. These categories, they don't add up to 100. It's because one person could have said every single one of these things. And there were certain individuals who just like wrote whole essays, right, naming every single thing under the sun. And there were lots of people who just wrote one thing, right? So this is why I don't even look to try and count these up. This is just an estimate. So only 7% of people mention the king. So I just said, what does Tainus mean to you? 7% of people mentioned the king. 10.4% of people mentioned religion in some way, mostly explicitly Buddhism, but not always. More people out of these three pillars mentioned some version of the nation, right? To be Thai or to speak the Thai language or something along those lines. That seemed to be the most popular one. Remember, we're in this region of Thailand. The most popular answer was something to do with traditions and culture, right? So again, I haven't primed them in any way. I haven't said you'll be in trouble if you don't give me the official version of things. I haven't put ourselves across in any way. And the most common thing that people come up with are just traditions and culture, and they listed all sorts of different things under this particular one. Second most common thing were values, characteristics, and behavior. So the ways that Thai people should behave. For example, Thai people should smile, or Thai people do smile, right? But Thai people should respect their elders. That was another one that came up a lot, right? So lots of things like that fit in there. Okay, so you can see, right, first of all here, that the official mantra that is often talked about is not the first thing that comes to people's mind necessarily. Now, this doesn't mean, right, people should immediately run out and say, oh my goodness, everybody hates the monarchy and hates the official version of Thai nationalism. It's just not the first thing that you think about, right? If somebody asked me what Britishness was, I would probably say something like fish and chips, right, sarcasm, because we like to be sarcastic, and different things like this, rather than, oh yes, it's Queen Elizabeth II, and our wonderful English language, right? I mean, if people push me, I might say that those types of things, but they would not be the first things that come to my mind. And they clearly weren't the first types of things that would come into Thai's minds. Now, so, in terms of the official trifecta, I've already said ethnicity was the most important thing. I have this question here that I'll try and answer later. Is this because the Lama feel the need to emphasize their Thai-ness, right? They officially weren't Thailand. Lana was actually only annexed to Thailand in 1899, so this is a pretty late coming together, officially, of those two countries. Their language was then banned. Their alphabet was banned in schools. Some of their religious leaders were oppressed, right, and they had to conform to the central Thai version of Buddhism. And then now they're trying to be made part of this Thai state. So are they really just trying to say, hey, look, we're Thai too, right? We're going to emphasize this. This idea that the official nationalism wasn't the first thing that came to people's mind, again, if you're a Thai official and you're thinking this is bad, it's not necessarily a negative thing. In fact, Benedict Anderson, one of the great writers on nationalism and the creation of nationalism, actually talks about needing to break down official hierarchies in order to reach true nationalism. For Benedict Anderson, in order to reach true nationalism, you need every member of that nation to feel like they are equal with every other person in that nation, especially with people who claim that they are monarchs and things like that. So even if you know, hey, look, King George, because in Georgian times here in England, so the first Georgian times, even if you know he is the monarch, that doesn't mean you can't sit there and mock him, right? And lots of people love to mock, I think, George IV, because he was quite overweight, and he built that big palace down in Brighton, right? And so people love to mock the monarchy, kind of signaling a period of time where everybody in England felt like they were on equal footings and that they could have a say in what this nationalism meant for them. So maybe that's what we're seeing here in Thailand here. Now, of course, ideally, we should compare this to other regions, and so I'm limited in what I can say in generalizes comparing to other regions, but this should start to tell you something. Okay, I did also break these down by party, right? People who dared to actually state what their party preference was, which a lot of people, these are the don't knows or refuse to answer over here. Lots of people also said, I have no party preference. But quite a lot of people said, oh no, I support Pho Thai or I support the Democrat Party. So how does this kind of break down? Well, if we look at the trifecta, we see that Pho Thai people are mentioning the king less, right? So again, especially if you were on the yellow shirt side, you would like grab this slide, take a picture of it, and start showing everybody and say, see, I told you that they didn't love the king as much. But that's not necessarily true, and the last thing I would want you to do is take away and interpret like this. There are other things, though, that are on the minds of Pho Thai supporters when they think of nationalism, right? Values, characteristics, and behavior. Traditions and culture. Lots of other things come to mind, and so we need to be careful how we interpret this. Okay. Another reason that I think they don't mention the king is the yellow shirts have kind of tried to stuff the monarchy down their throats for years and years, saying, "Ah, you don't love the king enough. We're the only people who love the king, right?" So it could be that they don't like the king, or it could be that they're just fed up talking about the king and fed up of being accused about not loving the king enough. So, just a bit on that. Okay, second question that I have on this survey was about support for separatism. Now, of course, I can't just come out and say, hey, do you support separatism, right? Because people would not give me truthful answers, and B, that would probably put them in danger. If the military knew I was asking that question, I bet they would probably send someone to hack my computer and try and figure out who had said those questions, right? So I didn't ask questions like this. What I did instead was I presented respondents with a hypothetical politician. Okay? And you got randomly assigned to see one of three types of hypothetical politicians. One that says, I support a California-like state. One that says, I support a Hong Kong-style autonomous region. And one that says, I want a separate independent country. Right? And then I just asked them, what the likelihood of them voting for this politician in future elections would be. Now, also, in order to protect these people, I put other information in there. So it wasn't just about this, because if they just saw that, they'd be like, I know what you're trying to do. You're really trying to figure out if I support separatism or not. So we have to put other information in there, but I do hold this constant across all of the different three hypothetical politicians. So you only get to see one. And then you see them, they either support a California-like state, Hong Kong-style autonomous region, or a separate independent country, and then you get to say what your likelihood of voting for them is. I also said other stuff about this person, that they want to form a new political party, that they used to be a member of Pho Thai, but they're not anymore, and that they used to participate in the Red Shirt political mass movement, right? So, but they don't anymore. So this is the information I gave. So here are the results. You can compare them. And I've taken the category here And again, this is partially to further protect people in this sample. These are just people who said that they were highly unlikely to vote for this type of person, right? So people who didn't like it. So you can see here that the politician who said we want an independent country in Lana, 47% of people said there's no way I'm voting for that person, right? And that's the only category that I'm going to give in this public lecture. So almost half of people said that there's no way that they would vote for that person. Compare that to someone who was just saying, I want a California-like state. Only 31.1% of people said that they would not vote for that person. So clearly, right, there's what, a 16% difference here. A politician who is espousing separatism is a lot less popular than a politician who is suggesting something else there. Again, this is comparing group averages. Now again, what does this look like if we split this up between poor Thai supporters and Democrat Party supporters? We're actually kind of interested. Not surprisingly, the people who kind of dislike these types of politicians in general, poor Thai have lower levels of dislike, saying I absolutely wouldn't vote for that person because this person, I already told them, used to be a poor Thai member, right? And a former red shirt person. So they like this person generally more. Well, should I say they dislike him less, right? But look at this, 21% of people say there's no way I'd vote for this person when they suggest that. 42%, double the amount of people. And I know I have my map here wrong because this was from a previous bunch of numbers that I spec out. But these are the correct numbers here. So it's almost double, right? People who say that they dislike this person when they emphasize separatism. That's amongst poor Thai people who are supposed to hate the country, right? That type of thing. Turns out that they don't, at least, hate politicians who, or they do kind of dislike politicians who espouse separatism more. Democrat Party people, now they already dislike this person anyway, right? Because he's former poor Thai. So even with a California, like say, 58% of people say there's no way I'm voting for this person ever. And that jumps up a little higher when they say, they want an independent country. But surprisingly, people who have explicitly said they're Democrat people, some of them actually said that they would vote for this person, right, in a positive manner. 25% of Democrats said, yeah, it's kind of likely or highly likely I would vote for a person like this. Maybe some of those people weren't reading the question properly. I take that, right? But since this is supposed to be randomly distributed, people who would read or not read the question properly, we can kind of conclude that maybe some people who are Democrats in the North, maybe some of them would like some type of independence or more voice for the people up in the North. I think maybe this does kind of rule out the fact that people who are poor Thai members aren't all secret separatists, right? Because there is such a strong reaction between those two groups. So, in other words, it's a lot more complicated than you think, right? The North is not just full of Thaksin-loving people who are Lana separatists, right? And the Democrat Party people may be just as likely, right, to actually like somebody like that. Okay. Here's another thing that comes out of it. And I promise I'll try and tie this all together at the end. So, I wanted to measure the strength of their ethno-regional identity. And again, that question about how proud are you to be Thai, or tell me how strong on a scale of 0 to 100 you feel your Thai-ness is. None of those questions actually work in Thailand. So I had them play a game. And this is a game that's used by economists. And in this game, what they do is they give a person two notes, right? I gave them two 20 baht notes. And I said, here's the game. You're going to see a screen. It's going to have you in the middle. It's going to have two other people. You have two notes. The only rule is you have to give away both of the notes, but you can't give both of the notes away to the same person. That would stop people from just taking both of the notes for themselves, which I know I would do if I was given such a game scenario. So almost everybody gives themselves one note. That means they have another note, and they have to now decide who to give that note to. So what we did was we randomly assigned who those two other people were. One person was from their region, another Lana person, somebody else was not, right? We had lots of different versions of that. And they all played 10 rounds of this game, and they actually have physical notes that are given in their hand. They have physical envelopes that they have to put the money into, as well as record it on the computer. And they actually got the money that they kept, right? So economists have used this to measure the strength of ethnic identity in a number of different studies in the past. What actually enables us to do is to see how much they actually bias people from their own ethnic group, from the Lano region. And so we then have kind of a measure of this. Okay. So here's the screen that they saw. They saw different information, like what their religion, because we didn't want them to just think this was all about their region, so we gave them religion, the region, we gave them their ethnicity, we said whether they were urban or rural, and then they played the game. Okay. So now we have this measure of how strong people's Lano regional identity is. So now I want to use that to link it to things I actually care about. I mean, it's a pretty cool measure in and of itself, I think, but just to describe that is needs to link to something. I don't know what's going on there. Okay, so the first thing I wanted to see, do people from Pūʻātai, do they have stronger Lano regional identities? And they do indeed have stronger regional identities. It doesn't blow the other ones out of the water, but there's a significant difference, right? Other supporters of other parties come in second, Democrats come in third. People who actually refuse to answer any party preference whatsoever, they're really kind of unique. They have really low levels of Lano identity. So it tells me that these people are kind of actually a different group of people. They refuse to tell you what party they belong to or refuse to answer the question. And they don't really bias their co-regionals in the same way as others do. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Okay, now linking this to separatism. Again, so these are people who support those hypothetical candidates who are advocating separatism or a California-like state. And indeed, people who... So you're going to have to get your head around this, because remember, I've got all of these categories to get back with. But if you say you're unlikely or very unlikely to support that type of candidate, you actually have lower strengths of national identity, which is the way that you might think this would go, right? So in other words, if they're advocating separatism, and you say, yes, I'm very likely to vote for that person, you also have strong levels of Lano regionalism in the game that we had them play. The place where it actually really comes out the most is in this California-like state. This is where you actually see the biggest and most significant difference. And again, these numbers won't mean much to you in terms of... They actually go from a scale of 0 to 1, where 1 would mean you completely bias your people from your own region, and 0 means you bias the outgroup. But these are pretty strong differences. So, again, if you favor the person who says we need to have a California-like state, you had really strong levels of nationalism, of Lano nationalism, ethno-regionalism. If you said, no, there's no way I'd vote for that person, you had much lower levels of nationalism. So this tells you something, right, about this particular option and how that actually goes along with Lano regional identity. This didn't really come out in the other ones. You see similar patterns, but they're not as significant, right? Generally, what this tells you that in these other options, people with strong Lano regional identity are still saying, I don't really want that separatism thing, right? But they can handle a California-like state. That's something that's palatable to them. Okay. I also asked some questions about, do you think that the school, the education system should change, that we should teach more regional histories, that we should teach in the regional language, so in the Gamung, in the Lano language, and should we use the old regional alphabets and bring them back? Generally, Pūʻātai supporters supported these things higher than Democrats. And also those who tended to have, because that also correlates with this, stronger Lano regional identities also supported those policies more. So you can see that we're building a picture slowly over these different questions, trying to tackle the thing in different ways, that we're building a picture of there's probably something to this and it probably is having political effects, right? Now, if you go to Chiang Mai, you go out in the airport, you'll see lots of Chiang Mai culture, right? They have a very distinct architecture, different style of dress. You see that right there in the airport. You walk out of the airport, you'll see some nice lanterns hanging in the airport parking lot from the north. You definitely get a cultural sense. But just because you have cultural differences doesn't mean this automatically translates into political differences, that this becomes politicized. The results emerging from this survey suggest that there is a political element to this. Okay. I wanted to play this last game, and this is kind of where I end. I wanted to see if I could move people's identity, make them stronger or weaker, right? And so here's what I did to do that. I used a thing called a prime. And what I really wanted to figure out was, remember those components that I talked about, components of nationalism that I had to kind of list out? I wanted to see which of those components of nationalism actually tended to make people feel more Thai versus more Lanna. So I had them read this. I told them it was an op-ed in a newspaper written around Thai New Year. And it says, the Thai national identity is basically great, right? It's been great for us through all times. And especially this thing, and I changed these things here in yellow, but it's kind of a horrible, pukey color here, the Buddhist religion. And I would change this out for the Thai language or the Thai monarchy. So I have all of these different things, and then I mirrored those in terms of regional ones. So here I have the Lanna version of this, where I say, hey, the Lanna identity, isn't it just a wonderful thing that has served us throughout these ages? And especially this, you know, Lanna... You know, the Buddhist religion that has been up here in the north. In the old days, they used to have a slightly different version of Buddhism and different, slightly different teachings and things, although I'm sure most people aren't aware of this. So I just tried to prime them about this by talking about the Sutaip Mountain, Doi Sutaip, which is kind of very central to Lanna people and their religious experience there, to get them to think about, this religion is all about, you know, linked with Lanna. Okay, so here I have the different primes where I tried them to think about this. And what you would expect with primes, because this is the whole point of primes, is you get them thinking about this, they're supposed to kind of behave this way, right? So I have all of these national primes. The idea was I wanted to try and make people more nationalist, right? Over here I have these regional primes. I wanted to try and make people more regional, right? More connected to their Lanna identity. So here's what I found. So maybe you guys can look at this and think, I wonder what's going to make people really kind of nationalistic here. Maybe it's the king, right? Maybe it's religion. And over here, what's going to make people feel like really Lanna? Maybe it's their language, right? Maybe it's some type of person. Okay. So, these are the results here. And the only thing I'm going to show you, I circled them for you. So I don't have to explain everything, right? So here is the control group. Some people didn't get to see any prime at all. They just went and played the game. But other people were randomly assorted into these different groups. So people who saw the Thaksin prime, and if it's bigger than the control, this is where the control is, and both of its confidence intervals here. That's just significant. That's all you need to know. Right? So I circled it for you. So if you saw the Thaksin prime, people in Lanna tended to be much more Lanna in their identity, right? Much more strongly Lanna in their identity. So there is something about Thaksin that is kicking in people's Lanna identity, right? So, and we can talk about what the meaning of that is, if that is just about his ideology or his policies or what there is. But all I did was I stuck him in that prime, and he's making people in that game, he's making people bias and favor people of their own region. Kind of a fun one. Here's one that I didn't expect, because over here, I tried to get them to think about the national language, right? The beauty of the Thai language, the literature, etc. Turns out that Lanna people kicked against that. And they actually became more Lanna in their regionality, right? In their regional identity. And I think what was happening there was people were saying, we have a language too, right? Isn't our language beautiful and important? You're just talking about the central Thai language that you make us learn in school. And so you give them that, and they kick against it, and they become more Lanna. Here's one that I think is really important. I wrote these ones about war, because there's theories about how war leads to national identity and consolidates that. Now, it turns out that this, when I did it from a regional perspective, and I wrote things like, aren't people from Lanna like... This is like a horrible version of it. Aren't they like really big and strong and brave, and they've gone out, and over the century they've protected this region that we now know is Lanna, right? And I wasn't thinking much about that because I was just trying to mirror the national frame. It turns out that this made people really, really nationalist, right, rather than regionalist. And what, after I debriefed this with lots of people, and I did try and do this before. I did try and pre-test my questions. But after I did this and I explained this result to them, they're like, I think people are reading that as if you're trying to say separatism is a good thing, right? And so this, which I'm now kind of interpreting as my separatist thing. When you mention separatism, Thai people are just, I mean, Lhana people are just like saying, hey, I don't want anything to do with that, and I'm going to act way more Thai. In these games, remember, I just had them play the game after where they give out money, and they're not favouring their co-regionals anymore. In fact, it's quite a strong thing. So these are the three main takeaways that we should have from this. Okay. And this is where I'll end here. Because a lot of this is driven by poor Thai supporters. Similar results across the board, but a lot stronger for poor Thai supporters. So they react much more to the Thaksin frame, not surprisingly. So maybe what they're saying is, with this, that we as Lhana people, we just want to have our democratic voice heard, right? Maybe it's got nothing to do with Thaksin as a person, although he's quite charismatic, right? Maybe it's got nothing to do with his policies, although his policies were pretty inventive. Maybe this just has to do with we want to have our democratic voice heard. In terms of the language, right? Remember I tried to prime them about the national language and they kicked back against this? Are they really just saying here, look, we just want to be accepted as Thai, right? You annexed us into our kingdom, you made us learn Central Thai, and now you're trying to say that our own local language doesn't mean anything? Just, we're Thai too. Accept us as Thai. And finally here, separatism really weakens the Lhana identity. And I think this goes along with these things here, which they're saying, look, we're Thai, we want our voice to be heard, we want our language to be accepted. And by the way, this whole idea of separatism that you keep trying to accuse us of, that actually, we don't want that, right? We actually want to be Thai. And so I try to tackle this question from many, many different angles, as you can see, to really try and understand it. So in conclusion, I'm just going to show you some quick pictures here. These are some magazines that the opposition, the yellow shirts, put up accusing the red shirts of being separatists, right? So this is in a magazine called Satsapada, so like end of the week or the weekend, call it like that. And they've got these pictures in here of, you know, accusing them of trying to carve out this Lhana state, which strangely includes the northeast in there. They have a picture of Thaksin here, and he's dressed in traditional Chiang Mai royal clothing. So they're saying, hey, look, this guy wants to be the king, and this is the country that he wants, right? They made lots and lots of cartoons about this. This one is actually called The Country of Lhana. It goes on and it mocks Thaksin again, who they dress up in this traditional royal clothing, and it goes on and basically saying how he's hoodwinking all of these people, that they're just gullible, etc. They mocked him. They made a flag for him with a buffalo in there, right? Sign of disrespect, saying this is going to be your national flag when they become separate there, and here's going to be your king. Right, so this is what they were doing to mock them. Now here's the danger in all of this. If you believe the results that I've presented you, right, that says, look, right now they don't want separatism, but there are certainly some implications that Lhana identity is correlating with preference for certain types of policies, right? But here's the danger in mocking them and accusing them of not being loyal to the state is maybe one day one of these groups will actually rise up and be like that. The group that we've seen that's come closest to this is called Rak Chiang Mai Hasik Ek. So, I Love Chiang Mai 51, which I think was maybe the year it was founded, something like that. Thais have different years, so we won't go into this. And this person here is the former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra, standing in front of this group that has roundly been accused of advocating separatism, right? Many people think it was that group that put up those banners across the north, although no one's actually taken responsibility for it. Here's another group that's up in the north. So this is basically the Council for the Protection of Democracy in Lhana, right? That's the translation of it. And they have these initials, the Saw Bo Bo Law. It's not coincidental that these initials are also the identical initials for the People's Democratic Republic of Lhana, which has not gone unnoticed by people. This one is actually the name of Laos next door, right? The Democratic People's Republic of Laos, which has the same initials, Saw Bo Bo Law. And so many people say, maybe this is one of them too, right? This group has actually gone on and created some different advertising for themselves where they started using the Lhana script. Because it's a beautiful script, very different than the Thai script. But here they're tying into ethnic identities. Oh, I already showed her as well. So maybe this, which, you know, they look quite happy, and the news reporter said that this was a joke. Maybe if they continue to be ignored, right, their democratic voice is stamped out in coups, or you push out their other democratically elected prime ministers in different ways. There is something boiling under the surface, right, that may be a little bit more serious. Here's a group of people that actually dared to stand in public before the coup in 2014 and said, this country has no justice, right? We want to separate into the country of Lama. That group was a little bit more serious, right, than the other one. Okay, so that is where I'll end my talk today. And if you have any questions or comments, I'll be happy to hear them.